This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. At last report yesterday, more than 21,000 firefighters are deployed around the country, mainly in the West. More than 1.5 million acres have been charred by 62 large wildfires that are currently burning.
The fire danger is comparatively low in Wisconsin, but the state isn't immune from large-scale fires either. And this time of year, wildland firefighters from the state are dispatched to places like Oregon, Montana, and California.
While fires have always burned landscapes, the regularity with which enormous fires are overspreading the West is something relatively new. And the phenomenon has roots in both the natural and human-affected worlds. As writer Michael Kotis has chronicled in his new book, Megafire, we reached him on the line from Colorado. Rado, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
So let's start with a really basic point, but one that might not be appreciated by everyone. Why is fire such a key part of the natural order of things?
Well, fire is as natural to most vegetated landscapes as rain is. We don't need fire as often in most of those vegetated landscapes, but in some ways, fire is nature's gardening crew. It goes in and it removes underbrush and dead wood and things that build up in the woods. It's also critical for the survival of certain animal species. Animals like, say, the black-backed woodpecker, which are completely dependent on severely burned forests for their homes and for the insects that they eat. And it's also a very critical part of rejuvenating soils throughout both forests and grasslands. In Kansas, where I grew up, there are still ranchers from Texas and even as far away as Mexico who send their cattle up to Kansas to graze on fields that the ranchers in Kansas burn, because a cow that grazes grass on a recently burned pasture can gain more than 20% more weight than it would grazing grass in an old field that hadn't burned in a number of years.
Huh. Well, so then how are the fires today that we're seeing in places like Montana and California and in Australia and Israel and elsewhere, how are they different from this normal, even beneficial fire cycle?
So we've really changed the structures of our forests. And we've changed the chemical makeup of our atmosphere, so we're raising temperatures in a lot of landscapes, and we also have moved into these landscapes. So we have a huge amount of development in vegetated landscapes, and all of those things affect the fire cycle. One thing that we did was put out wildfires for a century in the United States. We actually had a policy called the out by 10 a.m. policy for many decades, where any natural wildfire that was sighted anywhere in the country was supposed to be extinguished by 10 a.m. the next day. And in a lot of forests, that allowed a huge buildup of fuel. Some of our ponderosa pine forests, say in Arizona or New Mexico or Colorado, burned in what they called low-intensity ground fires every 10 or 20 years. And when we put out fires for a century, we interrupted the fire cycle so that some of these forests missed 5 or 6 of the natural fire cycles they would have experienced. And so all of the fuel that would have been burned away by those fires instead built up. And some of these forests now have 10 or even 20 times more fuel, more trees and brush in them than they would have naturally. So when a fire finally does get away and burn in those forests, it burns entirely differently because it's got far more fuel than it had historically in those forests.
You also mentioned development in vegetated areas. This is the place that it's referred to as the wildland-urban interface. This is not just people who want to have a house in the woods these days.
No. I mean, sometimes it's communities. Here in Colorado back in 2012, we saw a fire burn into the city of Colorado Springs and burn hundreds of homes inside the city limits in areas where most of the residents didn't think they had a forest fire threat at all. In fact, most of what burned were the trees that they had planted in their yards or the landscaping and materials that they'd used in building their homes. The U.S. Forest Service now estimates nearly one in three U.S. homes are in the wildland-urban interface where they risk burning in a wildfire. So there's a huge threat and cost of development in flammable areas. But it also means that we've changed the way fires start. A recent study this year showed that about 84% of the wildfires in the nation are started by humans. Not necessarily arsons or the things that we think of, like somebody throwing a cigarette out the window of their car. You know, often it's something like a power line that goes down or sparks from a vehicle wheel when it has a blowout. In California, they've had three instances of fires being started by golfers who actually hit a rock with their golf club, and the spark from the golf club on the rock went into dry grass and started a serious wildfire. So we're not just providing new fuels in these forests and building homes that can be destroyed by the wildfires. We're also bringing fire into these forests.
Well, so when it comes to the policies that have kind of led to this current fire regime, are we talking mainly about the Forest Service's role here, or is this the will of the people and local governments as well?
It's both. The Forest Service is the big dog in wildfire, but they're one of several land management agencies in the federal government that are involved in fighting wildfires. The Park Service, the Fish and Wildlife Service, the Bureau of Indian Affairs are all involved in the fight against wildfires. But states have their own issues with wildfire. Cal Fire in California is a huge firefighting agency focused on wildfires. And then county governments, municipal governments, just your local fire protection agency. They're all involved in dealing with this and all bearing the incredible escalating costs of wildfires to the country.
Well, so if the policy in years past had been this out by 10 a.m. mentality, now today when we have one in three people living in the potential path of a wildfire in this wildland-urban interface, how do we approach fire suppression when there is so much private property in such close proximity to places that could burn?
Well, the land management agencies are really trying to focus their efforts on protecting communities that are threatened by wildfires or infrastructure that is threatened by wildfires, like, say, power lines or reservoirs, watersheds. There are a lot of things threatened by wildfire that we depend on, outside of just our home. So that's one issue with it, but it also is very complicating to both the firefighting effort, going in and trying to manage a natural process and effectively a weather phenomenon, with the community there. It also makes it really difficult to prepare for wildfires with, say, forest thinning operations and prescribed burns, because these forests, many of which have much heavier fuel loads than they had naturally, so they won't burn the same way they did historically, need wildfire put back into them, or they need fire put back into them. And so we usually do that with a prescribed burn, which is basically a fire that's intentionally set by foresters and firefighters and managed by them to try to do the good work that fire used to do for that forest and bring it, into a healthier state. But when you're having to do that next to a community, they may not be happy about that. Many communities aren't happy with the smoke that they'll have to deal with when you have a prescribed burn. They don't necessarily like the idea of having a fire in their backyard and the threat that might pose to them. And we've certainly seen instances of prescribed burns that went wrong and destroyed homes and even killed residents in nearby neighborhoods. And, there's just a sense that, there's a lack of trust sometimes in the people who both have to fight the fires and reintroduce fires into these forests to make them less threatening when a natural wildfire starts in them in the future.
Well, and I gather in the era of climate change, the seasons that you can employ prescribed burns are getting shorter.
They are. Holding a prescribed burn is a very complicated and difficult process now. You know, often you're talking about hundreds of personnel that need to be involved in it. And one thing that we've seen with climate change, and climate change has a huge impact on the fire cycle in the country, is that particularly here in the West, our mountains get a little bit less snow, and that snow melts off a lot earlier in the season, in the spring, than it used to. So, you know, a snow-capped peak above a forest is effectively a little trickle reservoir that keeps that forest below it moist and prevents that forest from burning explosively. Well, when that snow melts off earlier in the season, that forest is primed to burn earlier in the season, and the season in which foresters and firefighters can go in there and manage prescribed burns to kind of lower the future fire risk in that forest gets shorter and shorter and shorter, and the threats and risks of that prescribed burn increase.
I know you're right about this issue as well. When it comes to fighting wildfires today, how do we prioritize firefighter safety in comparison to saving property?
Well, all of the agencies that manage wild and firefighters are constantly trying to improve firefighter safety, both through technologies like, say, better fire shelters, these little pup tents that every firefighter is required to carry with them when they're working on a wildland fire so that they can shelter from a fire that's blowing up. And also in policies in which they, rules for how wildland firefighters engage with fires. But when you're actually on the fire line and you're dealing with these wildfires, decisions are made very quickly, and wildland firefighters are facing threats and challenges that they didn't used to face historically. A great example of this was a couple of years ago when I updated my red card, which is the card you hold to show that you're certified and trained in the United States to work as a wildland firefighter. And when I went through the updated training, there were things in the training like what to do if you're a wildland firefighter and you stumble upon a meth lab in the woods or an illegal chemical dump, or what to do if you come to a community with a home that's got a long, winding driveway with a bunch of trees overhanging it. These aren't threats that wildland firefighters ever had to think about before, and they're threats that they're neither equipped nor trained to deal with. The other thing that wildland firefighters are having to deal with increasingly is communities and homes that are threatened by fires. And that's very difficult for wildland firefighters to deal with because, you know, it's pretty easy to step back from a bunch of burning trees and say, this is too dangerous, I'm going to let these trees go. You don't have a personal relationship with those trees. It's much more difficult to do that with homes when you're a wildland firefighter and you actually are in a forest next to a community and that fire's about to start burning down homes. Much harder to step back from the fire and say this is too dangerous because you may actually even know people that live in or own those homes, or you may be familiar with that community, and so you have what firefighters call a bias toward action.
We're talking about millions of acres that are burning each year. In fact, I think you say we're getting to the point where it's very possible that something like 20 million acres could burn in a bad year. What does the future look like for those lands that are seeing this high intensity fire?
Well, we're definitely going to see a continuing of the increase in wildfire that we've had over the last several decades. In 2015, for the first time since the U.S. government kept such record, we saw 10 million acres burn, and that was seen as, you know, a huge increase, and it was. The 1970s, the average was about 3 million acres a year burning, so seeing 10 million acres burn in 1 year was pretty flabbergasting to a lot of firefighters. But Forest Service scientists around the same time came out with a study that anticipated that sometime in the next few decades, we'll start to see 20 million acres a year burn. That's an area nearly the size of the state of Maine burning in the United States in a bad fire year. That's going to be very disruptive to many aspects of our life, even if you don't live in those forests, because we're going to see much more smoke in our skies across the country. We're going to see a lot of health impacts from those fires. We're also going to see great difficulties with our budgets. in 1995, about 16% of the U.S. Forest Service budget was spent on wildfire. In 2015, that year when we broke 10 million acres burning, 52% of the Forest Service budget was spent on wildfire. So if that doubles, we're looking at, you know, the majority of the Forest Service budget being spent on wildfire, as well as many other land management agencies seeing their budgets basically burned up by the wildfire problem.
Why was it important for you to renew your red card?
Well, for one thing, you know, I'm an old newspaper guy, so I like to get to as close to the front lines as I possibly can. So being able to do that, you know, required me to have a red card in certain areas, and so that was helpful. But it also helped me to understand the challenges that were you know, wildland firefighters are facing and the new challenges that they're facing in recent years. You know, one thing I write a lot about is the tragic death of the Granite Mountain Hotshots in 2013 in Arizona, and there was there were no survivors in this incident. There were no witnesses to what happened in the final minutes that these 19 firefighters were alive, but. The one thing that was happening at that time was the town of Yarnell was being burned over by this wildfire, and these firefighters could see it from the safety zone they were in on top of a mountain. Nobody knows why they would move from the safety zone that they were in into a heavily vegetated canyon that most firefighters would recognize as a death trap, except for the fact that it was the quickest way for them to get to that town and help out. And I felt I needed to go through the training and keep my training up so that I could kind of empathize and understand the decision-making process that wildland firefighters are being forced to make now, since those decisions are far more complicated and fraught with far more risk than they were, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
Well, Michael Kotas, it's really compelling reading. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Michael Kotas' recent book is called Megafire, The Race to Extinguish a Deadly Epidemic of Flame. We reached him at his office in Colorado.